Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Jesus, Dave.
So that wasn't going anywhere.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 111 for the week of April 4th, 2016. I am Dr. David T. Cole, and I'm here with hype antagonist Joe Reed.
You go squish now.
Part-time Nancy Tara Ariano.
Please don't hurt me, kabam.
Carpooling savior Dan McEckern.
Alexandria, we're heading that way. Hop in.
And Tennessee waterfall wearer Omar Gallega.
Party in the back, y'all.
Welcome back to the Extra Hot Grape Podcast. As you may or may not have surmised from that weird, gross intro, we are talking about the Walking Dead finale today. So joining us today is our official The Walking Dead coverer for Previously.tv, Omar Gallega. Welcome back, Omar.
Hello.
And first-time guest, Daniel McEckern, also a Previously.tv contributor, joining us here in Fort Awesome, Hawaii. Hello.
Hello.
Yay!
I'd like to say that it's delightful to be here, and I'd also like to add that it's about damn time, if I may say so.
Guys, he's not wrong.
I'm very glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. It would be awkward if we didn't, because you're right here, literally across the yard from our house.
So. My plan worked.
It was a long con, but it paid off.
Pity guest.
Not joining us today is Sarah D. Bunting, who is in transit after her baseball conference that she spoke about in the last podcast. So we miss her terribly, of course, but we will soldier on without her. Speaking of soldiers... The Walking Dead finale. I'm going to quote Omar from our doc that we all work off. What the shit? I agree. Talk about that bullshit of an ending.
Wait, just
season.
Before we get into it, can I just say,
yes,
we might get into comic book spoilers, but if we do, mm-hmm. I'll hit the spoiler warning before we do. So this is just TV spoilers at the moment.
That was a really bullshitty way to end an episode, in my opinion. Discuss.
It was, and partly because so much lead up has been this whole season teasing Negan, this new big bad character, mm-hmm. and we're all hoping he's not like the Governor 2.0, but the whole season has been, we're gonna meet up, we're gonna hit Negan's people, and we're gonna have a war with Negan, and where's this Negan guy? We're looking for this Negan guy, and then he finally shows up, and then the climactic act of the episode, which is we all knew someone was gonna probably die. Is carried on to next season. We don't know who got hit in the head with a barbed wire bat. So that is very frustrating if you've been patiently following this half season, which has been its own bumpy road.
It was frustrating, but also it was kind of like doubly frustrating because of the video game POV thing they used. I'm a proponent of not doing effects that make it obvious that there's a camera lens making this thing work. It's why I hate lens flares. And I also hate it when, there is a worm's eye chase camera and the dirt flies into the lens. That kind of stuff really takes me out of the moment. And the blood dripping down was somehow, double bad. It was so cheesy.
Dribbling down a pane of glass.
Yeah,
clearly.
Exactly.
Well, Joe, you were saying.
For one thing, it was the second week in a row we had gotten an ending of an episode with blood spattered on the lens. So maybe that's, the overkill we need to kill that trope dead. But it was also just way to give everybody the absolute avenue that they needed to just talk about how the show was actually clobbering its audience over the head. And because that was entirely the effect. And also I guess there are ways that could work if the episode leading up to that end like, that would have just been irksome if the episode leading up to it hadn't been also one of the all-time worst hours, or hour and 45 minutes, or however the fuck long, of The Walking Dead, like, I've ever seen.
Not like 5 hours.
It was really bad. It was so terrible.
And 4 hours of that was Negan giving his speech at the end.
Yeah, I would have minded the cliffhanger ending so much if he hadn't spent half an hour explaining how the saviors work and what the, you know, Rick's group is going to do for them.
Bring out here's the savior bylaws.
Here's our business plan. And
the chair recognizes Negan.
It's all Negan this and Negan that. But what about Jericho this and Jericho that?
You know, I got to the end of that recap and I had maybe like 12 minutes left. And, you know, I was like, oh, that's all one little particle like that. That's 12 minutes of particle that I can put in one little section.
Yeah.
Saves me lots of time.
It's
thank you.
It's always nice when that happens. I'm glad you brought up the governor because Danny mentioned that last night, too, when we were watching. We watched the finale with Danny's wife, Alex, who is not a regular watcher of the show. So she had some questions. Why don't you elucidate what her reaction was and your response?
Well, there was a lot of screaming and face covering because there's a reason that Alex doesn't watch The Walking Dead, the goriness primarily among them. But she had a lot of questions. She didn't understand what was going on. And then I realized that I couldn't answer some of the questions that she had because we've gotten to the point in the show where I have a hard time keeping track of who the new people are. Mm-hmm. It was only a couple episodes ago where I finally realized, oh, okay, so Denise is the doctor. And then she got an arrow through the eye, and that was the end of Denise.
Yep.
And that was after we spent a whole episode exploring Denise's motivation. So I think I'm going to need Walking Dead to start wrapping things up pretty soon because if we're just going to go from group to group to, like, new outside antagonist, the zombies were incidental in last night's episode.
Yeah.
And Alex was really confused about that, too.
Yeah. That was hard to explain, although she did jump very cutely every time there was a zombie, whereas the rest of us are like, yeah, that happens all the time. Like,
we've been desensitized.
Yeah, of course, there's one right around the corner. That's how it works.
Close the dumpster, Carol.
Seriously.
So speaking of Carol, that has been my big issue this season is that, you know, we have this character, Carol, who was my favorite character on the show. She had the best arc, the most change of any character from the first season to, you know, the fourth or fifth season. You know, the badass of the show who was willing to do anything to get the group to survive. And this season, they have really whiffed her characterization. They have really taken her to a place where I have no idea what she's talking about or what her motivation is. I don't know if she does as an actress. It is really confusing where she's at right now and what she wants or is doing. I don't get it at all.
And it was an abrupt change too. Like the character was so tough as nails and a practical character. And the shift seemed way too sudden for how strong of a character she was to me.
I agree. All of a sudden she just doesn't want to kill anymore. She, you know, kill herself then. You know, she doesn't want to live in this world where she needs to do that to survive, which she's been doing for the past however many seasons. Doesn't ring true to me.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but if she doesn't want to kill, that's fine. But I don't get the, now I have to leave and go away because, you know, I might have to kill for the people I love. Why would she leave the people she loves if that's the thing that's keeping her going? I don't get it at all.
What were you going to say, Jeff?
Well, the show has had issues with finding good reasons to get people out of Alexandria this season. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's actually had a very good reason for leaving the city walls since, for the last maybe like four episodes. But I'm sort of two minds with the Carol thing because, like, on the one hand, I appreciated at least for a while that they were sort of taking her somewhere because it seemed like they were running the risk of turning her into this sort of like the Fonz of Vigilance or whatever.
Yeah.
Where like she would be the character they would like truck in to like threaten a kid or like, you know, kill somebody without, you know, batting an eye and almost sort of in a fan service-y way. And it made some sense to me that like once Maggie got pregnant, then like that might trip the wires in Carol's brain and sort of bring back that woman she used to be a little bit and like give her some conflict. But it's the execution of the last few episodes. And you're right. Like it doesn't make a ton of sense for her to have left the city and sort of like go on this like wandering, you know, the wilderness. Like there seems to have been more things within the Alexandria city walls that she could have, you know, worked that out with.
I mean,
and
I
clutching
almost
a rosary and panic attacks. I'm like, what?
Yeah, the rosary seemed new to me too. I almost could see it if they sort of had done a better job establishing the idea that the arrival of Morgan in Alexandria had sort of made her reevaluate her own positions and like made her reconsider her philosophy maybe in relation to his because he is so strong in his beliefs and consistent until last night, I guess. when he killed that guy. But I don't know that they have earned it. Like, in a way, her opposition to Morgan has, for most of the season, really just made her even more convinced that she was right, I felt like. So I agree, this thing where she's all of a sudden has got to go kung fu it on her own doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And there's this whole thing with this last episode of an unwillingness in the last couple of seasons to kill off the prime characters, the ones that have been there from the beginning, Daryl, Michonne, Carl, Rick, in favor of just sort of introducing these newer characters and then killing them off. It seems like we're at a moment where they kind of almost have to kill a Glenn or an Abraham or one of the central characters, because otherwise
it's just not the whole thing.
Oh. They pretended to kill Glenn already.
Yes, they should have actually done it. That explanation of how he's not dead makes no sense.
Absolutely.
Although I feel like for a bit there, they had set up a good when it seemed last season like Rick was on the verge of just going like full on evil and like sort of, you know, taking Alexandria by force, and that Michonne and Glenn were being set up as sort of the opposition to that. That seemed to me like a dynamic that could work for the show in the long term, and they just totally went the other way, and Rick was right about everything in Alexandria, and then all the bullshit with this season started, and it just sort of took things away from that. But I still feel like when we're talking about when we come back from this, and like, odds are really good that the person that they end up killing is either Eugene or Abraham, right? After that scene of the two of them like manfully goodbying to each other. Like, unless this is a way to, like, work out contract renegotiations, it's going to be one of the two of them, right?
My money's on Abraham.
I think it still could be Glenn.
If I'm choosing between two.
You think it'll be Glenn?
I think it could still be Glenn. I actually thought that the best twist they could have pulled off was, and I don't know if we want to get into comic spoiler territory here.
I'm here in person. I can't avoid this now.
Yar! Comic book Walking Dead spoilers, aho, fun ahoy.
Do you really not
want to
hear?
No, it's three.
Yeah, you can leave the room.
I'll forget by the time I ever get to this in the comics.
There we go.
I'm still at the jail.
Well, in the comics, the person who buys it at the hand of Negan when we first meet Negan in the comics is Glenn. He's killed, and his last words is Maggie, which I think they could still do and would still be effective. What I thought would be an interesting twist was if they killed Maggie instead of Glenn and let Glenn live. I thought that would be sort of a way to fuck with the comic audience and do something interesting with that. I don't know that we need another baby around Alexandria. We already got Judith.
Well, the first, she doesn't seem to be much of a problem for anybody. That was another thing that was confusing for Alex. So, like, raising a baby in the zombie apocalypse doesn't seem to be any kind of trouble at all.
It's a problem for me. I am sick of that fucking baby.
The issue with Maggie dying, though, in the comic book world is that she takes a central role. So who would, if they follow that path where in the comic book Maggie sort of becomes a leader on par with Rick for the community. Mm-hmm. You know, who takes that role if they go that route? And I don't think they will. I think they kind of, I get the feeling that the writers feel like the gang sticking around being rooted, although it would be a goal for the people involved, kind of makes it hard to write around sometimes, as you were saying earlier. So I wonder if this whole Negan thing, once they work their way out of it, if they're going to go back to trying starting a settlement, or it's going to be back to some Roman.
I will say this.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'll say that's one thing I don't trust the show to do well is that there's a whole big community building aspect to the comic now that, like, it's about rebuilding society and past the whole war thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're ever going to get there on the TV show.
Who's the, there's another community, and I haven't read it in a little bit, but is he called the Prophet or something? He has a tiger?
Ezekiel, yeah, that's the, it's the Hilltop, and then the, I forget what they're called.
The Kingdom?
But they're sort of almost like knights. The Kingdom.
Yeah, yes, Kingdom. There's a guy who runs the Kingdom, and he has, I think, like, the Kingdom had a zoo in it. And so he's got a pet tiger.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
And that's what those dudes were last night.
That sounds like a Gary Busey role if I ever heard one.
Should we exit comic book spoilers?
Sure.
No.
Sure.
Oh, my God, you missed all the people who died in the comic book. Everybody.
I will say this for that last episode. It did feel flabby. I didn't think that there was a reason that it needed to be an hour and a half long. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of stuff that was super slow and repetitive and could have been cut. But I will say, I do think they did a good job of building the suspense of, like, our heroes or whatever, our gang, figuring out how badly they misjudged the saviors and realizing, we thought we were super badasses and that we had knocked them out just when we went to that one armory. Whoops. Yeah. We are really not prepared for this at all.
Andrew Lincoln coming to play with his pants-shitting scared face in the saviors camp. Yeah. That was great because, like, Rick doesn't really show fear like that. You know, that's the first time he's really gone that crazy since, you know, probably the first episode when all the shit was going down. He was figuring out everything. But that was really good. The other part I really liked about, previous to the Negan scene was, although it was repetitive with the zombie Roblox, I really love the practicality and of the zombie Roblox that they actually fed a chain through six dudes. And use them as a barricade. I thought that was a nice
legit
touch.
Disgusting.
Well, the saviors seem to appreciate spectacle, so I think
they're showmen.
Yeah, yeah. Performance is important.
Can we also briefly talk about, and like I have been like on a 2-year hiatus from hating Carl. Like honestly, I thought I was like over that hump, but like this thing where just like I'm going to end this argument with dumb old Enid, and like I don't like her either.
No,
but like. You're just going to, like, lock her in a closet where, like, any number of terrible things could happen at a moment's notice and she'd just be in a closet?
Yeah.
Like, it's a terrible idea, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
You dumb.
Yeah. Her and the girl from The Ring, dead in a closet, looking all gross. That's her future.
Oh, God.
Misha Barton's even experiencing something worse right now. She's on Dancing with the Stars.
it didn't need to be as long as it was. For sure. And
yeah, I wonder
really
about
thought
AMC...
the end was going to be much more of a sell than, or at least they hyped it up too much for what they ended up doing.
They hyped it up way too much.
I'm wondering if that's an AMC thing. If AMC, mandated like that needs to be a 90-minute finale, because, Scott Gimple was on Talking Dead. I only caught a bit of that, but he did not look thrilled about this episode. He looked like broken on Talking Dead. I wonder if that was an AMC saying, no, it needs to be 90 minutes. And they're like, we don't really have 90 minutes of story. And they're like, it's tough. And they had to stretch it out. Could that be the situation?
Maybe.
Put in six more
shots of people looking at the light in the truck.
The director was off camera making the stretch it out gesture at Jeffrey Dean Morgan while he was speaking at the end of the episode.
The frustrating thing about the end was that...
By the time they got to Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe, I mean...
Yeah, I was going to say, it was so random, like, that part, but, like, who is dead? Like, you have... I mean, beyond what we said earlier in the spoilers, like, it's a roulette wheel as far as the TV show is concerned. Like, it could be anybody. There's really, like, no clear direction where they're going there, and to know that they have... at will deviated from the comic books and to, it's not a detriment when they do. They made a lot of good choices. It's just like so random. So like, you know what I mean? Like it was this big buildup and then in the end it's just like, well, it could be anybody. And it's just like, well, they just should have showed it.
Maybe they didn't want to show it because they felt like it would be another Glenn fake out and nobody would buy it anyway.
Maybe they didn't show it because they don't know yet.
Yeah, I would buy either of those.
Well, that's why I said like contract renegotiation, like hardball or whatever.
Yeah.
But it also felt like the end of Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1, where it was just like, is it you?
We'll never know who did this.
Do we want to talk about Fear of the Walking Dead, which starts next week? We've watched at least the first episode. Some of us have gone beyond. This is the, oh my God, we really have to reduce the budget on this show, Waterworld Season 2. It takes place on a yacht.
Yeah. Omar will also be covering Fear the Walking Dead this season for Previously.tv.
So let's keep it spoiler free, but Omar, briefly, what are your overall impressions?
Well, the first season of Fear the Walking Dead, I had really high hopes for, and like a lot of people, I was pretty disappointed with the pace of it. It just felt like it was all over the place. It felt like it was jumping over the most interesting time period, which is when this outbreak happens and everybody's figuring out how to deal with it. Like they skipped over like 7 whole days of that, and just jumped ahead in time. I was like, why would you do that? And the characters are not super interesting. I think they've really struggled to establish likable people that you would root for. None of them really appeal in that way. Maybe Reuben Blades' character.
Oh, wow.
So the second season, I was interested in, like, well, how do you take these characters no one's particularly interested in and change the setting to the sea and make that interesting. I think they've actually done some interesting things. I think the change of setting out of Los Angeles and onto sort of the coastal area and onto a yacht is, you know, makes for some interesting story possibilities. There's this sort of claustrophobic feel in the boat. This guy Strand, who owns the yacht, is kind of an interesting as sort of a pseudo leader, like you're going to do what I say or not. And I think it's going to go in some interesting directions. The second episode, which I have seen, I actually liked a lot more than the first new episode. I thought the first one was a lot of setup. Mm-hmm. The second one, they actually get into an actual story that's pretty self-contained. I actually am more looking forward to Fear the Walking Dead than I am to the next season of Walking Dead, just based on this craptastic finale.
I will say this for the first episode of Fear the Walking Dead, with not going into spoiler territory. Strand is right about everything.
Yes!
He just he's just right, guys. When you see it, you'll be like,
he's our new Carol.
You're right about Strand being right.
He has very sensible rules for the boat.
Yeah. Yes, I mean.
And so is the other guy, the Reuben Blades character. He's also always right.
Yeah. I'll say this for the Walking Dead franchise in general. It really appeals to my fascist side in a way I'm not very proud of, but I acknowledge.
Yeah, it really does bring that out of you.
Joe,
it is very literally like, do what I say or get thrown off the boat, which is nice.
Look, you want to be on the boat or not? Follow the rules. Anyway, Joe and Omar said there were no likable characters. You said, oh, wow. Is that because you disagree?
Yeah, I feel like I like almost all of the main characters, except for the son that
Sad Sack Son
Curtis's character has. Yes,
son of the drugs.
No, that's the other one.
No, not the drug son. I like the drug son. Drug
guy? Oh, the other brat guy.
The sad video making son.
Oh, okay.
Is the only one I really don't like. I feel like I find them all fairly sympathetic and to some degree or another compelling. The daughter is sort of like more likable than interesting at this point, but like I'm willing to follow her along. And I think the boat sort of is a smart idea in that it puts everybody in real close proximity to each other. And you're right about the guy who owns the boat being right, but he's also like just asking to get like thrown overboard by a group of people who are just like, okay, well, your way or the highway, and now like we're getting rid of you.
My policy is when you're as right as that guy is, you can afford to be an asshole.
You be on the Abigail.
Also, it's international waters, guys. Anything goes. Danny, what did you think?
I wasn't as disappointed by the first season of Fear the Walking Dead because I liked the change in setting. I thought it gave it a different feel. And I didn't think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did, because what I liked about the comic book and the original series is how it went from zero to zombie so quickly. But then I realized when I was watching Fear the Walking Dead that I was also interested in learning about what it was like for people as society was falling apart around them. Mm-hmm. So to Omar's point, it was disappointing when they did a little bit of a jump ahead and now everybody's just sort of accepted that there's a zombie apocalypse. They don't know what's going on.
Right.
I do like this. I do have high hopes for the setting on the water, even if it's a butch decision, which do we know that that's true? Is that just speculation?
It just seems likely.
But again, it gives it a different feel from The Walking Dead, which I haven't been enjoying for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm just watching it on Sundays as a habit now anyway.
And just put a button on the discussion. That change in setting and this sort of like, oh, they're on a yacht, that's weird. That is like the big disappointment of World War Z, the movie. Because that book, if you haven't read World War Z, that is what it is. It's a whole bunch of vignettes about how different people in different situations deal with a zombie apocalypse. And one of them is like, I think it's a Chinese submarine, and they can hear the zombies on the ocean floor tapping on the hull trying to get in.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. You've told like, me that before, and it's so creepy.
Yeah, it's really good, and the movie bears only a slight resemblance to the novel. But if you liked the Fear Walking Dead sort of change of setting, change of pace, sort of that discovery of what's going on, I heartily recommend World War Z because it's basically just full of that. So, yeah.
All right.
Hey, Liv.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching season 10, episode 12 of Face Off.
And like I said last week, it's the semi-finale, so whoever moves on for today gets to join the finale.
Do you remember the word for the second last episode that Dave Cole taught you?
No.
It starts with a P.
Pemi-finale?
yep, that's absolutely it.
No, she's got the Dave.
You liked that one, huh? Oh, lips broken. The penultimate.
The penultimate.
There we go. Can you describe the challenge? Do you remember what movie they were advertising this week?
Something Kong.
King Kong.
King Kong.
Do you know what King Kong is about?
Nope.
Do you know what kind of animal King Kong is?
Some sort of gorilla monkey.
Yeah, pretty much. So can you explain the challenge?
They had to make a character that would suit King Kong's movie, mm-hmm. the new one.
And Mel did her first fabrication this episode. What do you think she did a good job for her first time?
Yeah, she's like, how come everyone's saying you need a hot glue gun for fabrication? All you need is duct tape.
And she had a lot of duct tape. You said you thought she used at least 3 full rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your favorite this episode?
I actually really liked Mel's.
I think she did a good job, too.
The coloring was extraordinary. There was lots of rainbows.
And considering she didn't do anything the first day at all, everything she did, she threw out in the garbage on day 2. It ended up being really, really great.
Considering she had nothing.
Mm-hmm. Who is the winner this week?
The winner was Melissa.
And who was the loser?
Mel.
What? I know. I was surprised, too.
I think it should have been Rob. He really bit off more than he can chew again.
Now, we've got the season finale next week. Who are you going for?
Part one.
I'd say I really liked Walter throughout the season.
Yeah?
He was really cool, although he did struggle a lot, too.
But he persevered, and he ended up doing really well. So, you know, maybe it's kind of a good story for him. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it next week. Thanks for speaking with me.
Bye.
We have a special message from Ari to Lara, and as a fellow bearer of a non-standard spelling / pronunciation first name, I feel a kinship with Lara, who has undoubtedly spent her whole life correcting people on one or the other or both. Seldom if ever seeing a namesake in pop culture. And since Ari let us know she is a Game Time fan, we have a mini Game Time, which we call, almost. I'll give you the name of a TV character that's almost the name the same as our birthday honorees. You tell me the show she is on. Let's start with Kara Danvers.
Supergirl.
Correct. Laura Petrie.
Dick Van Dyke Show.
Correct. Zara, the pretentious lister of French films.
Peep Show.
Correct. Daria Morgendorfer.
This is a little insulting, but Daria?
Correct. Sarah Braverman.
Parenthood.
Correct. Tara McClay.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Correct. Inara, space prostitute.
Firefly.
Correct. Let me just tally up the scores. And our winner is Ari for commissioning a wonderful birthday message for Lara. Happy birthday, Lara.
Happy birthday, Lara. All right, it is time to go around the dial, and our first stop is Tara Ariana.
Last night in America, the return of Call the Midwife, the pitiless tear extraction machine, as I've previously called it. This is season 5 of the show. They've now run out of story from the original source material, which was a memoir by Jenny Wirth, and Jenny is not on the show anymore either, although she's still doing the voiceover, which is weird. Narrating events that she has no part of, okay, but whatever. This premiere delves into some actual real shit. Trixie is still dealing with her alcoholism, which was a big storyline last season, and now she's going to AA, and she's also gotten involved with something called Keep Fit, which is apparently like a jazzercise precursor. It's scandalous because she does it in a leotard and the nuns don't like it, and she gets photographed in the paper. This is all very scandalous for 1960. And the other big thing that looks like it's going to be an ongoing storyline this season, tragically, is the real thing, thalidomide. They've had a couple of thalidomide babies born in the East End. There's been mention made of a previous baby who'd been born without thumbs. And then in this episode, the main delivery the only delivery is a baby that is born with just underdeveloped arms and legs, and what this does to the family. They already have two kids and the dad can't deal with it, and it's horrible, and you know it's only going to get worse, and they haven't figured out yet that thalidomide is the culprit, and I don't know if I can handle it. The show is such, it really is.
It was just a few flipper babies.
It's a gut punch every time, even before you add in horrible birth defects. So congratulations, Call the Midway, for upping the ante horribly. It's hard to say I'm looking forward to the season, but it's such a good show that I am. PBS on, check your local listings, but I think everywhere, mostly it's PBS Sundays at 8 p.m. And for my plug, a little funny story. I'm going to mention all of our podcasts. A great episode of Making the Sausage dropped a little bit late last week, so check it out. It's about stunt performers. And also, Hollywood Game Night Edition did not happen this week because sure NBC has put... It's put Hollywood Game Night on a pay no mind list.
It disappeared.
Apparently no one told anyone at NBC's scheduling department that there were actually 11 episodes.
Tara,
or, sorry, 12 and not 11.
Don't ask any questions. You should not be asking about Hollywood Game Night.
It would be one thing if they had replaced it with one of their like splashy new spring mid-season replacements, but instead of airing Hollywood Game Night, it aired a fucking Dateline, and apparently that's what's going to be on Sundays at 10 for the foreseeable future, because I tried to look up Hollywood Game Night on DirecTV, and DirecTV was like, never heard of it, there never was any Hollywood Game Night.
What if NBC just started airing old Datelines from like the OJ era, just like to capitalize on that trend? At this point,
you know what? I wouldn't put it past them. There's like so many OJ shows. Martin Sheen is fucking narrating one now. It's bizarre, the OJ phenomenon. Anyway, at some future time, we may or may not have an episode of Hollywood Game Nights again with this, if that episode ever airs, which, question mark, we do not know.
All right, now it is time to move on to Omar.
Well, Horace and Pete, and before everybody groans, this is the Louis C.K. Drama that he dropped on his website about 10 weeks ago. And this last Saturday was the 10th episode, and probably the last one. I don't want to spoil anything, but... And it's interesting, this if you were someone who dropped off of Louis, the FX show, because it was getting too depressing and too serious.
Go on.
And you wanted a comedy. This is not that comedy. This is very much a drama. This is like Louis C.K. spreading his wings to become a serious playwright, typewriter, and director. So it's hard to recommend it on that basis. If you're already kind of sick of Louis C.K. trying to be serious, you're going to have reservations. I think what saves it, and I've watched all 10 episodes, what makes it worth watching is that the acting in the show is pretty phenomenal. The cast list is pretty phenomenal. You've got Steve Buscemi, who is incredible in it, Edie Falco, Alan Alda, who's amazing in it, Jessica Lange, and then you've got this whole roster of guest stars who all get to have their own acting moments. Stephen Wright, Adie Bryant, Amy Sedaris pops up and does an amazing scene. You've got all these very, very talented people doing great acting work on this sort of soundstagey setup. And, you know, there's still some of the Louis C.K. things that we've had problems with the last couple of years in terms of the writing. But, I mean, you cannot really quibble with the acting. The acting is just an incredible showcase for some of these performers. And I would recommend, if you just want to see one episode and see if it's your bag or not, watch the third episode with Laurie Metcalf. She is absolutely stunning. And this is the kind of show that I think is going to be, come Emmy time, is probably going to pick up some nominations. There's been word that he is actually submitting it as a TV drama. So this show may be competing with your Game of Thrones and all of those shows come Emmy time. I really think it's an achievement. I mean, I've had problems with Louis C.K. the last couple of years with his show on FX. I think this is very much a big step forward for him in terms of directing and writing, and the performances are outstanding. So I think the obstacle, though, is that you're paying $3 per episode. That might be sort of a mental thing to have to get over. But I'm curious what he does with it now, if he puts it out on DVD or it gets broadcast somewhere, because it's really a kind of amazing piece of work.
But Omar, the episodes are half hour?
They vary very, very much so. Some go almost as long as an hour. Some are about 35, 40 minutes. I don't think they ever go below a half hour. And it's not sitcom-y, although it's sometimes staged that way. But some go almost the full hour. And, I mean, the third episode with Laurie Metcalf, I think, runs about 40 minutes. And I think 10 or 12 minutes of it is a straight to the camera monologue from Laurie Metcalf that is phenomenal. So yeah, there's some great, great acting in it. And as far as plugs, I write for a tech website now called 512 Tech that's run by the Statesman that I work for. And I co-host a podcast called Statesman Shots that's about Austin culture with my friend Tali Mosley. So you can find that on iTunes and everywhere else.
You talk about Tortie's Tacos a lot on that podcast?
Oh, it comes up. It comes up. Tacos. Yeah, that is queso comes up quite a bit.
Very important.
We got to organize the extra hot, great Austin reunion tour or something.
I'm keeping the queso warm for you.
All right, Joe.
So to my slight surprise, I would say, I caught up on the Shondaland shows last week. And guys, to me at least, Scandal got good again. And I was right on the precipice of dropping this show. If I had to watch one more iteration of Olivia and Jake or Olivia and Fitz or there's just feelings everywhere, it was bad. And I was ready to drop it, except they pulled their feet out of the fire with an election storyline, which seems like a no-brainer at this point in history, and it is. Putting the fates of the show on the shoulders of characters like Melly Grant and Susan Ross was the right thing to do at this point. And special shout out, I feel, to Artemis Pebdani, I believe is how her last name is pronounced,
yep.
who mm-hmm. you might remember as she played Artemis on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. She's popped up on, I think she was on Masters of Sex, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep, she was.
She's fucking fantastic on this show. She is easily the most likable character that the show has had in like several seasons, and I'm like ride or die for Melly always. So like, but even I am given a little bit of a conundrum as to who I want to support in this election because they're both so good, and then they're both up against this like Trumpish caricature, which is like just right for a show like Scandal because that kind of grotesquerie can only be reflected on a show like this. So they still need to kill Huck and they still need to kill Jake and whatever, but like they're on their way.
Jake!
Yeah. Oh God, he's gotten so repetitive. He is very attractive though. I did write about this at Decider.com if you want to go check that out. And also, tonight, as we record this, is the final reunion episode of Vanderpump Rules. And I've taken this journey to the end, and I will hopefully see Stassi come out on top in this final episode. But we will see.
Awesome.
Danny McEckert.
I'm going to talk about HBO's Vinyl. It would be wrong to
Boo!
Say...
Just kidding.
Well, it would be wrong to say that I'm quote-unquote enjoying it.
Sure.
What's kept me going watching it is because it is about a pretty fascinating time in pop music history, which is New York in the 70s. But the Bobby Cannavale,
mm-hmm.
his character is he's almost unwatchable. But what I found in the last couple of episodes that I've seen, and I haven't seen the last couple because I am on vacation, is that I really enjoy the scenes with Olivia Wilde. I find her character much more interesting, much more sympathetic. I've never really
Hang
watched
on.
Her
Is that because she's nude, Dan?
No. Is she?
I don't know.
I thought that was
it.
The thing about vinyls.
I've never watched
they showed,
it.
They...
I don't know. I think Olivia Wilde. I don't know for Olivia Wilde. But I... no, I... see, her and Richie, they were party people in the 60s and 70s, and they got married, and they decided to settle down. And so she sacrificed a lot of her own ambitions, and now she's dealing with this psychopath, drug-using murderer while she's trying to raise the kids. And I just find her scenes really compelling. I think she's really good. And that may not be news to anybody else who's watching her or anything, but I don't think I've ever seen her anything. Hmm. What else has she been on?
Oh, she's been in some bad movies.
Okay, so I've never really seen her before, but I don't hate Olivia Wilde. Mm-hmm. Vinyl's still not that great.
Yeah, she's in a movie called Drinking Buddies that you should watch. That I think you'd like.
Yeah, she's really good in that.
That's one of the good movies that she's in. But she was also in, like, the amazing Burt Wonderstone and other bullshit like that.
Cowboys and Aliens. All the rest of the time I'm watching Vinyl.
Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That, okay. So I should not put cowboys and aliens on the list?
Spoiler alert, she's one of those.
No, but see, every other scene in Vinyl, I'm just sort of tolerating in it. I'm looking for the music references. But when Olivia Wilde's on screen, I really enjoy those scenes, and I like what she's doing. She, you know, her husband's pimping her out to try to sign people to his label. Mm-hmm. He's throwing their future and their kids' future down the toilet, and I just find her, I find her great on the show.
Nice.
Anything to plug there, Mr. McKechnie?
Well, you know, I write for Previously every couple of years or so.
You covered MasterChef Junior.
Yeah, I do MasterChef Junior. I've done MasterChef as well.
So You Think You Can Dance.
So You Think You Can Dance.
You're around. You're in the mix.
You're in the mix.
But I mean, if anybody from the St. John's area is interested, you can check out my city council coverage. Those clowns on council are at it again with the budget cuts and the job cuts and the demolition of historic properties. So you can check all that out at thetelegram.com. And I am going to be doing a podcast of my own. We at the paper are going to be doing a few podcasts, and I'm going to be doing municipal affairs. So
awesome.
Anybody in the Newfoundland area, check that out.
Cool.
Hey, you say you're getting tired of lettuce and tomato hamburgers in this town that don't quite make it?
Yeah!
You say that just once you'd like your hamburger hot and your lettuce and tomato cool and crisp all at the same time?
Yeah!
Well, I say, you got it. I'm talking McDonald's new lettuce and tomato hamburger, the McDLT.
I'm talking quarter pound of beef on the hot side.
And the hot stays hot.
The new McDLT.
Hot, hot.
Crisp lettuce and tomato on the cool, cool side.
And the cool stays cool.
The new McDLT.
Cool, crisp.
The beef stays hot. The cool stays crisp. Put it together, you can't resist. The hottest taste, the coolest dish.
Keep it hot, hot. Keep it cool, cool. McDLT. McDLT. Hot, beefy McD. Cool, crisp LT. McDLT. It's a good time. Hot, beefy McD.
For the great taste.
Cool, crisp LT.
Of McDonald's.
Could be the best tasting lettuce and tomato hamburger ever.
New McD.
George is getting upset.
Oh my god. Was that him doing Jason the Alexander. Song part?
Yeah,
it really was.
Yeah,
singing
totally.
And dancing.
Oh god.
And you have to paint a picture. Oof. If you can imagine a cross between something you see in Miami Vice and something Rick Ocasek would wear in a video from 1980, whatever, that is what he's wearing. And all the ladies around him that are doing the backups are all dressed in primary color sundresses and are all just snapping their fingers, going crazy.
And he has hair, and it's like that episode where George has a wig.
It looks just like that.
Yeah. I don't like this thing.
Here's what I'm doing with it.
If you'd like to watch the video, check out the show notes. It'll be in there.
Guys, I have good news. It's Elise's birthday. You know Elise, right? She loves playing house.
What?
Linda Holmes.
Yay!
Whiskey.
Goo.
Strong lady friendships. The Adam Brody type, sexually. The Americans. Vegetables. Raylan Givens, sexually.
Timothy.
Off with his pants.
Forgetting books and bars.
Duh.
Luther.
Who will fight me?
And Her Highness CJ Craig, semi-sexually. Even though she once told Allison and Elizabeth she only likes them because they're mean, they miss being her roommates very much and wish her the greatest 28th birthday anyone's ever had. Cake for everyone!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Elise!
Woo! All right, everybody, that means it's time for the canon. And guys, you never thought it would happen. But here we go. Somebody's actually submitting an episode of The Newsroom for the canon. Dan McKechnie, take it away, you monster.
But there's a twist.
Oh, no. All right. Now
here's the lure in order twist.
With this canon submission, I wanted to accomplish a few things. One is I wanted to pitch something that not only didn't have an episode in the canon, but hadn't been pitched yet. I wanted to pitch something Canadian, which made that first goal a little bit easier because it was either going to be this or Degrassi. and so I bring you The Newsroom, not the Aaron Sorkin hack job from a few years ago, but a CBC series that ran for 13 episodes in the late 90s, just for one season. It was then resurrected for a couple of seasons in 2004, 2005. And the series creator, Ken Finkelman, has done various iterations of his character on this series for diminishing returns. I think the last time we saw this character, he was running a Fox News-esque kind of TV station. The newsroom, however, is set at a fictionalized version of the CBC, although it's never identified as such, but it is specifically in the newsroom of the Toronto Local News. And Ken Finkleman, series creator, is George Finley, the news director. He's vain, he's sexist, he's petty, he's not unbigoted, but fortunately for the series, his unpleasantness is usually punished because otherwise the show might be a little bit more difficult to enjoy. So I bring you episode 4 of the first season called The Kevorkian Joke, which starts with producers Mark and Jeremy showing George a video suicide note by a coworker who's a failed screenwriter with a broken heart. And as is typical, George cares only about himself in our first clip.
Where'd you guys get this?
Mark dubbed it, and then he gave it to me. And I had a party on Tuesday night, and everyone from the station watched it.
Except me. And you dubbed it? You didn't tell me you were dubbing this tape? A party, and I'm out of the dubbing loop, and I'm out of the party.
Oh, the party was nothing. Just a couple of cases of beer. Nobody had a good time.
But I wasn't invited.
No.
I'm not uptight about this. I'm just saying I was not invited to this, okay?
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Look, one of these times he'll succeed, and then we'll invite you.
Thank you. You know what we have here?
What?
This is our week, you guys. We put this on television. Mm-hmm. We'll kill with this. This is our ratings week.
It's one tape. How are you going to stretch it over 5 nights?
We bring him back. He'll do 4 more. He talks about suicide Monday through Thursday. Friday, he blows his brains out.
Blows his brains out? Where does a gun come in?
Yeah. Well, no, that was metaphorically speaking. He can kill himself. He can shoot himself. He can overdose on pills. He can slash his wrists. You know, I mean, these are production details.
Canadians might get a little bit more out of the next stretch, which is where we proceed through an interview with empty-headed anchor Jim Walcott interviewing author Daniel Richler, while George is bickering with his current love interest about Quebec's status within the country's distinct society. And I think Dave and Tara can attest to that was what passed for a Canadian crisis in the mid-90s. Uh-huh.
Yep.
And then it's back to George and his producers trying to figure out if they can get into any trouble for Suicide Week in clip number 2.
Okay, it's not a crime to commit suicide or even to attempt suicide, but what is a crime is if you counsel a person to commit suicide or you aid and abet a person to commit suicide.
We're not aiding and abetting.
Well, what are we doing?
We're going to wrap this around a social issue. Okay, we'll bring in some experts, and what we're doing is we're enlightening the public.
Okay, well, there's nothing about enlightening in here, so maybe we're okay.
You know, he's going to kill himself anyway.
Right.
Let him end it with a little dignity. We could win the week with this thing, okay? Let him end it with the dignity of being a winner.
Yeah, we win. He just dies.
Well, I did not invent the market economy, okay? I think this thing can work.
So with their consciences sufficiently eased, the news crew then gives suicidal Shane the spotlight in clip number 3.
What you are about to see is real, and we must warn you, potentially very disturbing. Mr. Pollock is a chronically depressed, failed screenwriter who's attempted suicide 3 times before. Am I correct there, Shane?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Three times. You are correct, Jim. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not a failed screenwriter. I mean, that's only by Hollywood's bullshit standards.
He said bullshit on TV.
Well, he's killing himself.
Yeah. If he wants to say bullshit, he can kill himself in late night.
George is not a fan of the spot and declares it to be too philosophical and tells Mark and Jeremy to quote-unquote punch it up for the next night. They seem a little bit surprised by the request, but they comply, as we see in clip number 4.
Once again, what you are about to see is real and potentially very disturbing. How are you feeling, Shane?
Everyone has the right to die, right? No one has the right to win, though, right? You have to earn the victories. You know, but even if we lose, we have a right to be treated with just a little respect, you know? Just a
I thought you punched this up.
No, I did. It's just a setup. Just
sure, yeah.
Wait for it.
Right, respect. Yeah, my agents haven't called me back in a year and a half because I'm a loser. Even Dr. Kevorkian, you know, the suicide doctor, I phoned him to help assist me, and he hasn't returned my calls.
That was fun.
I wrote that. That's my joke.
So then we get to a subplot, which involves the news team playing fast and loose with the facts in a story meeting. And this is usual for them. And this time it's about a story about a new virus in Zaire. And then it's back to Mark and Jeremy outright pitching jokes now for Suicide TV Day 3 in clip number 5.
Okay, this is the material for the suicide.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
Hit me. Okay? Give me the stuff.
So Shane's up, he's doing his thing, right? And then immediately just stops and he goes, you know, I called the suicide hotline today and it was busy. I was going to try again, but I didn't want to leave him hanging. He goes, it's hanging. It's like a double thing.
Okay.
I hate that.
Okay.
It's stupid. Don't, you guys, he told one joke.
Right.
Kevorkian joke.
Yeah, I wrote that.
The Kevorkian joke, there was a relationship. Kevorkian, he helps people commit suicide. The guy does. But it's real. Okay, these jokes have to be reality-based.
It's
got to
be something that really happened, right?
Yes.
Okay, I got one. Did you hear Hervé Villechaize committed suicide? Yeah, he jumped off a footstool.
He was tattooed? Tattoo in Love Boat?
How many years ago was that?
When he died or when it was on?
How many years ago was that show on?
Oh, I don't know. Wow.
This is a joke.
I don't see why we can't go for full...
This is terrible.
Full belly laughs.
Forget it. Right.
It's got my favorite little bit of this episode, which is the guy just throws away, tattoo from Love Boat.
So later, Shane's ex-girlfriend arrives at the station, and George's immediate instinct is to put her on television as well. But she wants no part of it. So he promises, because she is good-looking, not to exploit her, which really only means he wants to sleep with her, and he starts hitting on her shamelessly. Meanwhile, a visiting doctor is there at the station to comment on the virus in Zaire, and he coughs on George's muffin, which makes George freak out because the doctor has been to Zaire, and also partly because George is a bigot and an idiot. But that's pretty much par for the course at the station, which we see as anchor Jim Walcott chats with the doctor in clip number 6.
So a couple of hundred people have died from this virus already, haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah, with a potential for thousands more. Millions. What's the flight from Zaire? It's like 15 hours, is that right?
Yes, 15 hours.
Yeah. I just got back from Mexico. That was a 6-hour flight, I think. It's about my maximum on an airplane. But I also got a virus down there. It's terrible. I was on the can for a week with the thing.
The doctor just stares at him.
Well, excuse me, I have to.
So now the good news for the newsroom is that Suicide TV has them winning the ratings week. The bad news is that Shane's growing fame has improved his outlook, and now he doesn't want to die. That's going to spoil George's big weekending finale, and he will not have any of that, and he provides less than responsible counsel in clip number 7.
I think I can do stand-up, you know? Really?
Shane, be realistic, okay? You did 5 jokes. You didn't even write...
I wrote the Holocaust joke.
Oh, I wrote the Holocaust joke.
That was great.
Yeah. Guy steals my joke.
Sure.
It's pathetic.
The Holocaust joke, I think, was in very bad taste, even for somebody who was committing suicide. Oh. 5 jokes. Right. Don't make a routine, okay?
Oh, they worked, and, you know, with the right material, I know I can make it.
You keep saying that. You keep saying that. Okay, stop with that already. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to sound too harsh here. The fact is, you're virtually a cultural phenomenon. The next guy that comes out and tries to commit suicide on television, what's he doing?
He's doing a Shane Pollock. Gotten great numbers. The numbers are...
Oh, stop with the numbers. They're there. Stop with the numbers. The reason they're watching is they're waiting for you to blow your brains out, not because of the jokes. All right? I'm sorry, that's ugly. But there's an ugly audience out there. Okay, now I'm not counseling suicide. Okay? That would be illegal. Understand? Illegal. But what I'm saying is, this is your moment. It's your choice. Go for it.
But now Shane has an agent who has managed to sell one of his terrible movie ideas to a Hollywood studio as Tootsie meets Some Like It Hot meets Pulp Fiction. And that means Shane's appearance fee has gone way up, and that doesn't work out for anyone in our final clip.
So you just blew him out.
Yeah, he wanted $50,000 for the 5th day. And, this is a Canadian local news show.
I mean, we'd already won the week. What's the point?
Yeah, and his studio deal in L.A.
Yeah.
Totally collapsed, right? He was no longer committing suicide, so he was no longer high concept and quirky. And so they killed him.
Tough town.
Yeah.
So George doesn't have the virus, his newsroom is on top, and there's just one more thing he needs. And that's how, when Shane comes by the station to thank George for essentially giving him something to live for, he interrupts George and Shane's ex-girlfriend in implied mid-blowjob. So that's the newsroom. I think it should be in the canon. It obviously owes a debt to the Larry Sanders Show, but it was really unlike anything that was on Canadian television at the time. And I think the Kevorkian joke is a typically excellent example of one of the high water marks of the Canadian television industry. What say you, Extra Hot Great?
You thought they were mid-blowjob? I thought they were just kissing. So innocent.
Really? I
don't know.
We're only looking at the top half of the screen?
Maybe? I don't know, I guess.
He was sitting down. I think she was... A little bit lower.
Okay, and I believe you.
This, the episode previous to this also ended with an implied mid-blowjob.
Okay.
Between the anchor and an actual prosecutor.
That's the gimmick of the show. Every episode ends in a blowjob.
It was a thing that we did in the 90s.
This was the first episode of the show I ever watched, which I don't know how I managed to not watch it, having lived in Canada at the time. But it was really good. The Larry Sanders comparisons are very apt, I think. You don't talk a lot about the news anchor. He doesn't have a very central part in this episode, but he's really funny, that guy.
He's very funny. He's your standard stuffed shirt anchor, doesn't know anything, but he has pretensions and illusions of grandeur.
For sure. A lot of problems that I have with news reports on TV is that they don't capture how news anchors actually act and talk, and he really nails it. Like, he could walk right out of that studio and straight onto City TV at the time and completely fit in. I also liked the touches of Canadiana, like the Tim Hortons box for the muffin that is wrong. Then they don't have the brand muffins. And when Audrey, I mentioned this yesterday when we were talking about when Audrey comes in that teal checked flannel jacket shirt thing was like the Canadianest thing since a cougar boot, like so Canadian. So it really took me back to high school, really. I guess people were still wearing those in the 90s, but she, the fact that she had a teal one and not a red one is a little bit more fashion forward, but still every Canadian who's listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about. And the storyline I thought was strong. I mean, you know, the whole thing with the ratings week and how even if you're in public television, you have to pay attention to that and ethics don't enter into it. All very, you know, rife for satire. And I like the small touches, too, of the little incidental things, like who's his current love interest, the blonde that goes out with Daniel Richler?
I forget her name.
Anyway, they're getting ready to leave, and they both zip up their identical motorcycle jackets at the same time. It's like a very small thing that they don't really hang a lantern on, but I thought was well done. And anything that makes a Richler look like a dick is obviously good television, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, if you don't know that whole thing, the payoff is not quite as good, but that guy is like so smarmy.
Do you want to go next as our fellow Canadian, Dave, or should we let the Americans weigh in? Because I'm really, after we got to the end of it, I was like, I have no idea how an American is going to react to this. I mean, Joe is like half a Canadian because he's from Buffalo, but
I am half Canadian, that's true.
And Joe, why don't you go first then? Let's throw to Joe. And Joe, my first question for you is, did you see the Buffalo shout-out?
Wait, what was the Buffalo shout-out? I missed it.
The guy on one of the writers has a Channel 17 pledge mug.
Oh, I totally missed that.
It's in more than one scene, too. Yeah. It's obviously like his character mug.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go back and take a look at that. Oh, Channel 17. Please pledge them some money today.
What was what's the lady's name on 17? Trudy? Judy?
Well, one of them was Trudy for sure.
Trudy. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
There were like, they had the revolving sort of like three or four women that they kept. They all looked like your preschool teacher, too. They all had like that sort of like children's librarian long hair. Anyway, as a half Canadian, I think I probably better than half liked this episode. I had no idea the show ever existed. When they mentioned, I went on its Wikipedia page and they were like, the most important Canadian television series of blah, blah. And I was just like, wow, I never heard of it. Which was
Canada's weird.
They must have been excluding the littlest homo.
In reading the Wikipedia page, they mentioned there was this one article in Lake McLean's where they were when the Sorkin newsroom happened, just like an American company to assume that Americans have never heard of a Canadian thing. I'm like, yeah, that's an odd assumption for them to make, considering
you can go on Amazon and see reviews of the Canadian newsroom with warnings from people. Warning: this is not the American newsroom. I bought this by accident, but it's pretty good, which I thought was pretty funny.
It's a good marketing strategy at this point.
That's the most Canada can hope anyone ever says about anything it does.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Very true. I thought it was cool and interesting to see a storyline that felt very like networky in its conception, but delivered in this very sort of downbeat, like Larry Sanders is the right comparison also, but it also felt just sort of like as kind of straight-faced as we can deliver something with the prospect of, oh, at the end of the week, this guy's going to kill himself. But I thought the best parts of it were definitely just the banter between the news director and the two writers. And I thought a lot of the other stuff sort of came and went in ways that I sort of cared about to varying degrees. But I thought the parts where they would like banter back and forth. Also, there was the part near the end when you mentioned the Tootsie meets Some Like It Hot meets Pulp Fiction, and the other guy just goes, "Wait, where does Pulp Fiction come into it?" And he's just like, "Well, we'll have writers." The like, and it's just like, "Okay, that's a good bit. That's a good joke."
His two producers, by the way, just to your point, there are stand-up comedians. So, and Jeremy Hotz and Mark Farrell, both of whom I think also served as writers on various episodes throughout the show too.
I like their moment in the bathroom where it was like, there's a smash cut after the muffin moment. They're like, "Well, if he coughed on your muffin, why did you eat it?" That I thought was very well delivered.
Yeah, anyway. All of that stuff seemed very, like, when he shook hands with the guy and then went and touched his eye, and I was sort of unclear as to what direction that joke was going in. Like, why did he so obviously touch his eye? Was, like, was that supposed to be a mistake, or was he, you know, whatever. I didn't quite think that joke landed exactly as well as it could have, but, like, most of the jokes landed really well. It's tough to place this into any kind of context for a show that, like I said, never with, like, even with like Slings and Arrows, like, I didn't have a ton of familiarity, but I knew that that show kind of existed and knew what its sort of place in the ecosystem was. But it's you know, on its own as sort of a 30-minute little piece of comedy, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it.
Omar.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I had no idea this even existed, had never heard of it before. One thing that I have in common with Dan is, as a newspaper person, I like anything on TV that makes TV people look ridiculous, that makes TV journalists look like complete fools, because we kind of feel that way in newsrooms.
You're treated as the poor cousin to your TV counterparts. People are like, "Oh, maybe you'll be on TV someday." Well, maybe.
Yeah, we're not as attractive, so that's how we get our jollies, is by making fun of TV people.
Exactly.
I enjoyed that aspect of it. There was one joke in it that I don't know if it was just me, but when they were showing the guy in the room that was going to commit suicide, the quotation marks around "wants to kill himself" for some reason tickled me greatly, the Chiron on that. I really liked. So there were a lot of little touches like that some might have gone over my head, but I really enjoyed them. Unfortunately, it didn't make me want to watch more episodes of The Newsroom. It made me want to go immediately and pull out my Larry Sanders DVDs and watch that. There was one moment at the end where, and maybe it's because I didn't see the previous episode with the also implied blowjob, but that joke kind of fell flat to me as an ending, and maybe I've been trained by more modern comedies to expect a coda to that, to kind of expect an after credits little bonus scene that sort of ties things up, and I was sort of waiting for something like that, but without that, it kind of felt flat. I'm curious kind of how this might have influenced other shows after. Like, I mean, I know Larry Sanders obviously did, but I wonder if this show also had an influence on shows like The Office and other kind of workplace setting single camera shows that came after it. I mean, I certainly had never heard of it, but I'm sure there were a lot of writers from Canada that might have kind of leapt off from that point in their own writing. Overall, I really liked it. Like I said, it made me want to see more of Larry Sanders and maybe kind of dig back into this. But it's hard for me to say how it fits into the whole 2, 3, 4 season run of this.
Yeah. This show sort of splits the difference between an American show and a British show, you know, like it's dark, but it's not quite as dark as like some British shows can get. The Canadian-ness of it is not as Canadian as some shows can get. For a Canadian show, it's really good. And let me qualify that. A lot of Canadian shows, when they're made in Canada, have to do all these CanCon rules, which is Canadian content rules. They have to have a certain amount of Canadian talent. They have to have a certain amount of Canadian content, like the actual writing has to be about Canada, which obviously is a set in Canada. It gets through that. But some shows are very forced. You know, some shows, a lot of shows, are made show first and then figure out a way to do all the CanCon stuff is tacked on. And you can tell where things just sort of take a right turn at Albuquerque kind of stuff. I know I've worked on a lot of show marketing initiatives for that kind of stuff, where here's the script,
we need to get funding. How do we get funding for this government fund or the Bell Fund or whatever is going on? And then they add all this Canadian stuff to it. They'll add like a...
Graham Greene gets added to the mix for no good reason.
Yep. but this show seems organically Canadian,
yeah,
which I enjoy. And not all of it's going to translate to an American audience, but I think there's enough universal stuff going on here. I think you can enjoy it, as I think both Joe and Omar did. I hadn't watched this episode.
Joe's trying to get your attention.
Yeah.
The one Channel 17 personality you might have been thinking of, I just realized her name was Goldie.
Goldie, that's it.
Yep.
And she had like a Goldilocks haircut. She had like, no, not like a Prince Valiant haircut. She had like a bowl
haircut.
Yes,
she did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep,
totally.
That's the one.
Thank you. That's
You're
it.
Welcome. Yep.
So let's put this to a vote. Tara.
Sorry, I was just pulling up a picture of Goldie to show Jeff. God bless her. All right. As someone who lived in Canada in the 90s, I feel like I would get my citizenship revoked if I don't vote for this. And as an example of Canadian television, it is certainly one of the very best. So I will say yes.
Over. All right. Joe Reed.
It's no Road to Avonlea, but I liked it. So I will also vote yes.
All right. Omar?
I'm going to defer to my Canadian friends on this episode. I did enjoy it, and I'm going to assume that the quality is there in relation to other Canadian shows and in relation to other episodes of this show, so I'm going to say yay.
All right. Well, it's no Littlest Hobo, but it was pretty good. It was well-written. And
it's no The Red-Green Show either, let's be honest.
And well-argued. Thank you, Dan.
The problem with Littlest Hobo... Sorry?
What?
The problem with Littlest Hobo was selecting which
entire
run to pitch for the cannon, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. The Newsroom, the Canadian one, Season 1, Episode 4, The Kevorkian Joke. You are hereby inducted into the Ookstra Great Kunin.
You all couldn't see Danny's celebratory cabbage patch.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
No.
It is time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Tara has her winner.
The winner is The Blacklist. Somehow, NBC is in a weird place, as we previously mentioned, with regard to Hollywood Game Night. All of the shows that don't have Chicago in the title are kind of like always on the bubble, I feel like. And yet The Blacklist somehow is still a hit for NBC. So much so that it's getting a spinoff. There's going to be a backdoor pilot airing May 12th, directed by Justified alum Michael Dinner, apparently, with... Famke Janssen taking over as the Pink List star. I don't know what they're going to call it now that it's a blacklist about a lady, but apparently that is happening. So that will be coming out next fall, I assume. Her character is introduced in episode 321, which would be like the penultimate, the Pemmy finale of season 3, which is airing May 5th. And then I guess that it'll be the finale will be the door opening into this other show. So if you're a fan of The Blacklist, I guess that's good news for you. I have not watched it since the pilot, but good for everyone involved, I guess.
And Loser of the Week?
Loser of the Week is, I'm going to say, Sterling K. Brown and also Cuba Gooding Jr. from People vs. O.J. Simpson. There was an article this week about how the show and FX are strategizing Emmy campaigns, and it seems like they managed to get John Travolta to agree to a supporting campaign, which is bad news for Sterling K. Brown, who I think is giving a phenomenal performance as Christopher Darden.
For sure.
But it's going to be hard for him, I think, to compete with the star power of a Travolta, who does seem to be poised to waltz up to that Emmy podium. Also, I mean, Cuba Gooding Jr. doesn't deserve it, but he's just going to get creamed in comparison to Courtney B. Vance in the lead category as Johnny Cochran, who I also feel like is poised to take that Emmy. So
yeah.
I guess we can cross our fingers that maybe Darden makes it, but I have a feeling that's Travolta's award to lose.
Speaking of things getting creamed...
or awards to lose, for that matter.
Do you know what time it is?
Time for muffins?
Game time.
Muffin game time.
Game time.
Is it really? Don't tease.
We do not have muffins.
No, sorry, no muffins. This is a non-regulation game time because Sarah, as we mentioned, is dead. But
she's not dead.
This week, first place gets 3 steel meals.
Hey.
Steel meals, delicious. And second place gets 1 steel meal. And if you're third or fourth, you get nothing. Nothing. All right, today we are playing unsung themes from frequent contributor John Potts, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. In unsung themes, you must identify TV shows from a flat reading of an excerpt of the theme's lyrics.
Oh, no.
There are 48 questions, each worth 1 point, with no hints. All right?
Yep.
Pretty simple.
All right.
Picky, let's see who's going first.
We will start with Joe.
All right. Joe, Omar, Danny, Tara. That's our order.
Got it.
Are we ready to play Unsung Themes?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
All right. We're starting with Joe. And I will say some of these are songs that were used as themes as well.
Okay.
I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah. I've never been with anything less than a 9, so fine.
Ooh. Huh. Wait, there's no hint apparatus in this?
Nope. You know it or you don't.
All right. Oh, this is tough. A Farrah?
Farrah.
Not a Farrah, just no. Farrah.
Was seen with Farrah.
Oh, I see. So F. Not a generic Farrah type person, but specifically Farrah.
Capital F Farrah.
Correct.
Yeah, it's not helping me. I don't know.
Anybody know that one?
Is it The Fall Guy?
The Fall Guy with Lee Majors.
Wow. Correct.
All right, moving on to Omar. Here's your first one. It's been a long road getting from there to here.
Oh.
I want to sing it so bad, but I'm not going to.
Oh, you will.
You're right. I will.
Oh, geez.
Tara.
Don't know.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's Star
Still
Trek.
No.
Enterprise.
Enterprise with the Rod Stewart song.
Oh. No.
That's what I think of that. All right, Danny, here's your first question.
All right.
Come listen to my story about a man named Jed. He was a poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed.
Well, I thank you for that relatively easy one, because that... Well, I shouldn't say that, because I screwed
up. We'll see.
That must be the Beverly Hillbillies.
That is correct.
All right,
I want to do a note, just so everybody knows. John Potts sent that. Beverly was spelt with 3 E's, which only means one thing.
He's Robert Durst.
He's Robert Durst. Oh, they caught you now. Oh. Sure, John, you got a free sandwich, but at what cost? Tara.
Yes.
Thank you for being a friend.
The Golden Girls.
Travel down the road and back again.
Okay.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. Golden Girls for a point. Back to Joe.
Yes.
Now, the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some.
Shout out, Sarah. Different strokes.
Different strokes.
Omar, let's ride with the family down the street through the courtesy of Fred's 2 feet.
That would be the Flintstones.
Correct. To Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes tears and sorrow are the only things you got. Just when you think you're all by yourself, you're not.
That sounds a little bit like a later verse of the Cheers theme song.
Good guess.
Is it Kate Nally?
Yeah, it's Kate
Nally.
Nally
right?
Same general time, I think. To Tara.
Yep.
Somebody save me. Let your warm hands break right through.
Picky, why wouldn't you give this one to Omar?
I know.
Smallville.
It is Smallville, correct. All right, back to Joe. Joe, I hope you've been paying attention historically to this very podcast.
Oh, God.
There's a voice that keeps on calling me. Down the road, that's where I'll always be.
Wait, is this the Littlest Hobo?
Da, da, da. Joe, that also nets you 3 day points.
Hey!
Yeah!
That's hobo style, Joe. To Omar.
Mm-hmm.
Come and knock at our door. We've been waiting for you.
Oh, Three's Company.
Three's Company is correct. Back to Dan. Think you're going to get this one, Dan.
Don't bet on it.
just the good old boys, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born.
Aw, another shout out for Sarah. That's the Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard, correct. Tara?
Yeah.
Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood.
Spider-Man,
correct.
The Amazing Spider-Man. I don't know what the show is.
Yeah, Spider-Man's fine. To Joe. Take my love. Take my land. Take me where I cannot stand.
Oh, this piece of shit theme. Firefly.
Firefly theme, correct.
Send those angry emails to Joey. Yeah.
I like the show. The theme is bad.
Yeah. It is one of the worst. Omar, it seems today that all you see is violence in movies and sex on TV.
That would be Family Guy.
Family Guy for a point. Damn.
Yep.
Sunny day, sweeping the clouds away, on my way to where the air is sweet.
Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
Sesame Street, correct. Tara, bring us into our first score break.
Yep.
Now, this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down.
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is correct. All right, it is time for our first score break. Let's hear dem scores.
Very tight game. All of the gentlemen are tied with 3 each. I have 4.
All right. So 4-3. Mm. Continuing on with Joe. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Why do we always come here? I guess we'll never know. It's kind of like a torture for us to watch the show.
That would be The Muppet Show.
The Muppet Show, correct.
Your favorite.
Omar. I'll be there for you when the rain starts to pour. I'll be there for you like I've never been there before.
I think it's just like I've been there before.
Like I've been there. Yeah, you're right. I added a never.
Sorry.
That's a different theme song.
Friends.
Friends, correct. All right. Mr. McEachern.
I got the hard castle.
Got the hard castle. Making your way in the world today takes everything you got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot.
Well, it would be stupid of me not to get this one now, but that's cheers.
That is cheers, correct. Tara.
Yep.
If you're out on the road feeling lonely and so cold, all you have to do is call my name and I'll be there on the next train.
Gilmore Girls.
Correct. Joe.
Yes.
She was working in a bridal shop in Flushing, Queens, until her boyfriend kicked her out in one of those crushing scenes.
The Nanny.
The Nanny, correct. Omar. A long time ago, we used to be friends, but I haven't thought of you lately at all.
Ooh, one of my favorites, Veronica Mars.
Correct. To Dan. Yes, no, maybe. I don't know. Can you repeat the question? You're not the boss of me now.
Yes, no, maybe. Can you?
Yes, no, maybe. I don't know. Can you repeat the question? You're not the boss of me now.
That's not ringing a bell. Who's the boss?
Anybody?
Malcolm in the Middle.
That's a Tara. Do you know that? Because that's a They Might Be Giants song.
It was a They Might Be Giants song around the same time. Yes.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Our whole universe was a hot, dense state nearly 14 billion years ago. Expansion started. Wait.
I mean, you use context kills and kills? Guess. Yes, context kills.
Yep.
Context clues and guess that it's the Big Bang Theory?
Yep, you're correct. Joe, I bet we've been together for a million years. And I bet we'll be together for a million more. Because it's like I started breathing on the night we kissed and I can't remember what I ever did before.
I'm sitting right here. You don't have to hit on Joe in front of me.
Rude. Is this the beginning to Family Ties?
Okay. Sir, it is. Omar. Out here in the field, I fought for my meals. I get my back into my living. Out here in the field, I fought for my meals. I get my back into my living.
Oh, shit. That's familiar.
I will give you a little clue. It's one you have to follow from the song to the show. Kind of have to have all the parts to answer this correctly, I think.
Can you repeat it one more time?
Yeah. Out here in the field, I fought for my meals. I get my back into my living.
I know this. But I don't.
All right. Well, that's got to be a Who song because it's
CSI.
CSI New York.
Oh. Oh.
All right. Forget Dan.
Okay.
Tell me why I love you like I do. Tell me who can stop my heart as much as you. Tell me all your secrets, and I'll tell you most of mine.
And this one I recognize. Can I hear it again?
Tell me why I love you like I do. Tell me who can stop my heart as much as you. Tell me all your secrets, and I'll tell you most of mine.
It's not coming.
How are you doing on this one, Tara?
Tara knows. Tara, sing it.
Tell me why I love you like I do. Tell me who can stop my heart as much as you. Let's take each other's hand. It's Mad About You.
Oh, okay, Mad About You.
Mad About You.
Is it too late to say Mad About You?
It's right. Non-regulation. Tara, take us into our second score break.
Okay.
Woke up this morning, got yourself a gun. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen one.
Hi, Sarah. Sopranos.
Sopranos. All right. This time for our second score break. That was question 28 of 48.
All right. Danny has 4. Omar has 5. Joe has 6. I have 7.
All
still
right.
A very close game.
That is a close game. We're going back to Joe. I am the sun. I am the air. I am human, and I need to be loved.
This is Charmed.
That is Charmed. You are correct for 1 point. Omar. Omar, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have.
The facts of life.
The facts of life. Dan.
Mm-hmm.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. Altogether, they're ooky.
The Addams Family.
Tara.
Yes.
On another day, come on, come on, when the drones attack and we do it all wrong.
Rescue Me?
Yeah, nice. Well done. Joe.
Yep.
It's a jungle out there, disorder and confusion everywhere. No one seems to care. Well, I do.
It's a jungle out there. What comes after it's a jungle
it's
out there?
It's a jungle out there. Disorder and confusion everywhere. No one seems to care. Well, I do.
Shit. I know this, but I can't get it.
Anybody?
Oh.
Monk.
Oh.
Hi, Sarah.
Sorry, Sarah.
Omar.
Yes.
All the world is waiting for you and the power you possess in your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, jeez.
I'll read that again for you. All the world is waiting for you and the power you possess. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
Sons of Anarchy.
Is that Wonder Woman?
Yes.
It
sorry.
Is Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman is correct.
Dan.
Right here.
Just sit right back. And you'll hear a tale, the tale of a fateful trip.
Gilligan's Island.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
I'll be there whenever you need me. I'll be there. I'm always here.
I don't know.
No?
No, I don't.
Anybody?
Is that Baywatch?
Baywatch.
Of course. Oh, of course. Sorry,
all right.
Sarah.
Joe.
Yes.
High winds in the northern sky will carry you away. You know you have to leave here. You wish that you could stay. There's 4 directions on this map, but you're only going one way.
Oh, this is another one that's very familiar to me. Can I hear it one more time?
High winds in the northern sky will carry you away. You know you have to leave here. You wish that you could stay. There's 4 directions on this map, but you're only going one way.
I don't have it.
Canadians?
No.
Due south.
Oh, of course.
Due south. Mm.
Wow.
Sorry, Canada.
Yeah. Omar. Mm-hmm. Dance your cares away. Worries for another day. Let the music play.
Down at Fraggle Rock.
Fraggle Rock, correct. Dan.
Yeah.
I can't do it all by myself, because I know I'm no Superman. Keep in mind, Smallville's already been answered.
I guess...
I can't do it all by myself, because I know I'm no Superman.
I guess just context clues, I'm going to say Lois and Clark.
I like that guess.
Yeah.
Scrubs.
Yep.
Ah, Scrubs.
I'm no Superman.
Take us into another score break. Tara.
Yep.
La, 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 la. This is my stop. Got to get off. I may go pop. Excuse me, excuse me.
I have no idea. I don't know.
Joe?
Daria.
Oh. No,
you're wrong. Joe was right.
Yeah.
That was Daria. All right. It is time for our third score break. Let's hear it.
Still an extremely tight game. Danny has 6. Joe has 7. Omar and I are tied with 8 apiece.
All right. So everybody's got 2 points left. So everybody has a chance to at least tie it up mathematically. That's the way I like it.
Okay.
Joe.
Yes.
Goodbye, gray sky. Hello, blue. Nothing can hold me when I hold you. Feel so right, it can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling all week long.
Again, stop hitting on Joe.
Sorry.
I'm very flattered. Happy Days.
Happy Days is correct for a point. Omar.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know about the future. That's anybody's guess. Ain't no good reason for getting all depressed.
Don't know about the future.
That's anybody's guess. Ain't no good reason for getting all depressed. Got
wow,
a guess.
No idea? No idea.
Anybody?
Blossom.
Mm. Yep. All right, Dan.
Yep.
It's a rare condition in this day and age to read any good news on the newspaper page.
I know this one.
A rare condition in this day and age to read any good news on the newspaper page.
Rare condition in this day and age. I can sing it in my head.
You can sing it in the mic too if you want.
No, nobody wants that. Okay. all right.
You want to throw an answer in?
You know.
All right. Anybody?
No. I know.
Family
I know it, though.
Matters.
Family matters.
Oh,
family matters.
Of course.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Damn it.
Where you can go when the world don't treat you right, the answer is home. That's the one place you'll find. That you'll find. Where can you go when the world don't treat you right?
Where can you go?
Yes.
Seventh heaven. Is it seventh heaven?
It is. There okay. We go. That's the button. Thank you. All right, everybody's last question coming up. Let's hear the scores quickly.
Okay. Omar and Joe are... Danny has 6. Omar and Joe have 7 each. 8 each. And I have 9.
All right. So, Joe can catch up, theoretically. Let's do it. Joe. The animals. Yes. The animals. Trap, trap, trap till the cage is full.
Oh, Orange is the New Black.
Correct. Omar.
Mm-hmm.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
I know the song. I don't know what show it was with. Could it have been Freaks and Geeks?
Incorrect. It was the 20th season show Supernatural.
What?
Still going.
Okay.
Yeah. For Dan, sing me a song of a lass that is gone. Say, could that lass be I? Mary of soul, she sailed on a day over the sea to sky.
Xena the Warrior Princess. I don't know.
No, sorry.
Lass is the hint.
Utlander.
Utlander.
It's been a while since I've been able to say Utlander.
I was not going to get that in a million years.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
This is for the win.
Okay.
You're currently tied with Joe, correct?
That is correct.
Yes.
Riding through this world all alone, God takes your soul, you're on your own.
I don't know. I really don't.
Joe might know it.
It's familiar to me, but I'm not getting it.
Anybody else?
Sons of Anarchy, right?
Sons of Anarchy.
I didn't know that theme song actually had lyrics. I was just kidding
it's
before.
Not good.
All right, so that means we have a tiebreaker to contend with. Woo! Omar, Dan, take a knee.
What?
This is between Joe and Tara for the victory.
And
3 points.
And the steel meal.
Here we go.
Oh, boy.
Hope you've been paying attention. Chime in any moment. The All Risks Agency is the last chance at the last moment. The Crook's Dirty Tricks.
The A-Team.
A-Team is correct.
That is the French lyrics
to the A-Team.
No. La dernière chance, au dernier moment, les mauvais coups, les truands, l'agent des règles au comptant.
Wow.
Tara.
Good game handshake, nice. Everybody.
All right, so that means Tara,
you just
added 3 steel meals to your tally. Joe, you got 1 steel meal. Reminder that those are good to steal a point away with a correct answer after somebody else gets an incorrect answer. So use them wisely. All right, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We chewed the fat on The Walking Dead's 6th season finale. Liv gave us the quick scoop on Face Off penultimate episode before we went around the dial with stops at Call the Midwife, Horace and Pete, Scandal, Vinyl, and the McDLT. Dan made the successful pitch to include the newsrooms, not that one, Kevorkian joke into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's game time.
You want to go ahead and turn off that game time loop?
Yes. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
they didn't have blueberry.
Omar Gallega.
Head bash, end of season.
Joe Reed.
I hope it's Eugene.
And Dan McKecker.
Hey, correctamundo.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Wow. This is a joke.
I don't see
this
why we can't
absurd.
Go for full,
this is terrible.
Full belly
okay?
laughs.
Forget
I mean,
it.
You know,
forget
right,
it.
Right.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.